Okay, Larry, I think we're ready to go. Okay, this is the Yechezkel Shir. Book of on the Book of Yechezkel. It's also dedicated to all our soldiers. And may God protect them. And we are holding in Yechezkel in chapter 14, verse 14. This part of the prophecy, the end of chapter 14, between verses 12 and 23, deals with the various plagues and natural events, natural tragedies that will strike Jerusalem. The four categories that all tragedies that affect the world fit into, which are famine, wild animals, which includes natural disasters, violence, the sword, and the fourth one is disease, pestilence, and plague. And we're told that all these four categories, as we'll see as we go through the chapter, will at one time or another affect Yerushalayim by themselves and together during the time of the destruction of the first temple. And strangely enough, in verse 14, we're told. And this is going to be a punchline that's going to run through to the end of the chapter. I'll just read to you verse 14. Should these three men have been in Yerushalayim during the time when the first of these plagues struck, which is famine, again, if these three men had been in Yerushalayim during the time when famine struck in Yerushalayim. Who were the three? Noach, Daniel, and Eov. Noach, Daniel, and Eov. They would only have been able to save themselves with their righteousness. So says God. And that's what we got up to at the end of last week. We started to discuss how Noach was saved from famine, how Daniel was saved from famine, and how Eov was saved from famine. And then we got to the point at the end of the shir where we had to do an examination. Really, Jewish history forced us to do an examination of why Eov, Job, is in this list. And we had a look at Gomorrah. First of all, we understood that each of these three individuals, Daniel, Noach, Daniel, and Eov, are on the list because they all survived. They all went through everything that the people of Yerushalayim went through. They went through a world that was bonui, a world that was built, v'chorav, and then destroyed, ubonui, and rebuilt again. All three of them. Noach lived at a time when civilization was advancing. Then v'chorav, that was bonui. Then v'chorav, it was destroyed by the flood, and then ubonui, it was built again. Similarly, Daniel lived at the time of the first temple period. He saw it in its full glory. V'chorav, he saw it destroyed, ubonui, and he rebuilt his life in Babylonia. He became the chief advisor to King Nebuchadnezzar. And similarly, Eov lived at a time where he was wealthy, affluent, well-respected, etc. Then the Satan came and took everything away from him. V'chorav took everything away from him. Ubonui. And then he rebuilt his life. He was rehabilitated and rebuilt his life. So, but we got to the point where we're actually discussing the story of Eov and why Eov. We can understand Noach, ish tzaddik, tomim hayo b'darozo. Noach is described in the Torah as being a tzaddik, perfect in his generation. Daniel is described by God as ish chamudos, somebody that God thought a lot of. But Eov, who on earth is Eov? And we had a discussion in the Gemara in Bava Basra on Daf Tesvav and Tezayin, pages 15 and 16, and there's multiple opinions about who Eov was. So just to repeat the end of last week's share, the Gemara is completely unconvinced or unsatisfied with all the opinions about Eov. First of all, the Gemara says Moshe Kosov Sifra Parshas Bilog, the Eov. that Iyov lived at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the Gemara says, no, no, Iyov lived at the time of Yitzchok. Then the Gemara says, no, Ve'ema Yaakov. No, he lived at the time of Yaakov, and in fact, he married Yaakov's daughter, Dina. Then the Gemara says, no, Ve'ema Yosef. He lived at the time of Yosef. Then the Gemara says, no, Iyov bimei meraglim hoya. He lived at the time of the spies. He lived in the land of Israel when the spies went into the land. As the Torah says, Hayesh bo eitz im ayin, God asked the spies to look out if the eitz was there, the man from Uz, which is where Iyov was from. So the robber says Iyov lived at the time of the spies. And then the Gemara says, no, Iyov lo hoya v'lo livra. No, Iyov never actually lived. He's just a figment of the imagination. He's a parable. He's an allegory. And then the Gemara says, Iyov me'olam gola, me'ole gola hoya. Iyov was one of the guys at the time of Daniel, and he was exiled to Babylonia, and he was one of the returnees from Babylonia. Who based Midrash up at Tveria, and he learned Torah in Tveria. And then the Gemara says something very strange. Okay, we can't work out what era he lived in, but what did he do for a living? So the Gemara says, Shiva Nevi'im in this Nabal the three non seven non-Jewish prophets. Ve'eluhem, Bilam va'Ovid, Bilam and his father, who was Be'or, Bilam ben Be'or, Iyov, was a false was a non-Jewish prophet. So the Gemara says the not only might Iyov not have ever existed, or we don't know when he existed, but he wasn't even Jewish. So and then the Gemara carries on. Rabbi Loza Omer Iyov bimei Shvat HaShoftim. Iyov, another opinion. Iyov lived at the time of the Shoftim, time of the judges after the death of Yeshua. Then the Gemara says, "Rav Shua ben Korcha Ami Iyov b'mei Achashverus." No, he lived at the time of Purim. Ve'ema b'mei Dovid. They said, "No, he didn't. He lived at the time of Dovid HaMelech." Rav Nosson Amar Ema b'mei Malchus Shavuot. No, he lived at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, at the time when the Ethiopian Empire under the Queen of Sheba was alive. Ve'yesh Omrim Iyov b'mei Yaakov, repeating what it said before. V'dina bas Yaakov Nosa. That Iyov lived at the time of Yaakov and he married Dina. And so it's all very confusing exactly what's going on with Iyov. Did he live? Did he not live? Was he Jewish? Was he not Jewish? So this is what the point we got up to last time. And we got up to the point where the Rambam, Maimonides, weighs in on the discussion. And he weighs in on the discussion in the Mora Nebuchim. The guide nominally described this translated as a guide to the perplexed, but that's not what it is. It's a guide to the people that have learned the whole Torah and still have got questions. And he makes the following observation. This is in the Mora Nebuchim, in the guide to the perplexed, in the third section, chapter 22 of the third section. He writes as follows, and again, this is where we got it to last time. He says, "The strange book of Iyov deals with the subject matter tzaddik v'ra'lo rosh v'tovlo. Why do bad things happen to good people, and why do good things happen to bad people?" And the Rambam says it's basically it is a fiction conceived for the purpose of explaining the different opinions which people hold regarding divine providence. He says it's quite clear from the Gemara that there are opinions in the Gemara, which is the opinion that he holds by Iyov lo hoya v'lo nivra. Iyov never existed at any stage in history, and that he is a poetic fiction. Those who assume that he did exist and that the book is historical are unable to determine, as we just discovered, are unable to determine when and where Iyov lived. Says the Rambam, some of our rabbis say that he lived in the days of the Avot. Others hold that he was a contemporary of Moshe. Others place him in the time of King David. And again, others believe that he was one of those who returned from the Babylonian exile. This difference of opinion supports the assumption that he has never existed in reality. But whether, says the Rambam, Eov actually existed or not, the introduction to the book is certainly fiction. The portion which relates to the words of the Satan, the words of God to the Satan, and the handing over of Eov to the Satan, this is all fiction, and is in no way different from other fictions that include profound ideas and great mysteries, designed to remove great doubts about God's providence and reveal some of the most important truths that underlie the basis of Judaism. It certainly appears, says the Rambam, the probability is that Eov as a human being never existed. So there you have the opinion of the Rambam. He comes to the ultimate opinion that the probability is that Eov didn't exist, and the book is a book of fiction, just to analyze some of the deepest philosophical issues that are involved in trying to understand the nature of creation, the nature of God's providence, the way that God interacts with his creation. Now, it should be noted before we move on that the Ravid, Reb Avram Ibn Daud, who writes commentaries on the opinions of the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah and also in the Moreh Nevuchim, criticizes the Rambam for taking this position that Eov never existed, on the basis that how can the Rambam simply dismiss the opinion of so many Tanoim and Amoraim from the Gemara? Remember, in the Gemara in Baba Basra, apart from one opinion that said that Eov never existed, it appears that the majority of the people in the Gemara, the majority of the Tanoim and Amoraim in the Gemara, felt that he did exist, that he existed in some shape or form in one particular era of Jewish history. So the Ravid says, who is the Rambam? The Rambam is not a Tanna. The Rambam is not Namura. The Rambam doesn't appear in the Gemara. After all, says the Ravid, these Tanoim and Amoraim were much greater than the Rambam. And how dare he just dismiss their opinion that Eov never existed? Now, why should this concern us? It should concern us because of three issues. One specific to the opinion of the Rambam, and two general problems that we've got here, because here we are in Yechezkel in chapter 14, and Eov is brought in as an example of Bonoi Bechora Vubonoi, of a person that lived through a world that was built, a life that was built, a life that was destroyed, and a life that was rebuilt again, as a comparison, as a parallel to what's going to happen to Jerusalem. And if, as the Rambam says, Eov didn't exist, then what's he doing in our story here in Yechezkel? Like, why would God bring an example of a tzaddik as a parallel to Noach and a parallel to Daniel, who both existed, with someone who never actually lived? Eov, what's he doing in this story? That's the first problem. The second problem is if, as the Gemara claims, and this seems accepted by everyone, that Eov was not even Jewish, then once again, what's he doing in our story? After all, the suffering of these three tzaddikim are brought to parallel the suffering of the inhabitants of Jews in Yerushalayim. It's not a parallel to the suffering of non-Jews. So why is Eov, if Eov isn't Jewish, what's he being brought as an example of a great tzaddik that if he would have been alive in Yerushalayim, he'd have been able to save himself because he was a big tzaddik, but he wouldn't have been able to save anybody else. So if he's not Jewish, what sort of an example is he to be compared to the Jews of Yerushalayim? And the third question is, let's say for argument's sake that Eov really did exist and he really was a tzaddik, you know, could be. One of the opinions in the Gemara was that he was lived at the time of Yaakov, and he married Dina's daughter, and Yaakov's daughter, Dina. Well, you know, you can't imagine Yaakov agreeing to a shidduch unless it was to someone who was Jewish or, you know, from that ilk. He must have existed if he married Dina, and he must have been a tzaddik if Yaakov would have agreed to the marriage, then the question is, why do we find in the Gemara, which is the end of the Gemara that we haven't discussed yet, because right at the end of the Gemara, we've discussed the Gemara, the first part of the Gemara that describes, did he exist, which era he existed in. But then the Gemara goes into a different discussion that the Gemara says, Chosid there was a pious man from the nations of the world, but Eov Shimo, and Chosid there was a pious man from among the nations of the world, meaning he was not Jewish, but Eov Shimo, and Eov was his name, Job was his name, Bola Olam, and he came into the world, and his primary goal while he was alive was to receive reward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Alav Yisurin, God brought suffering upon him. Hischil Mechorei Fumagadev, and he began to blaspheme and curse God. So the Gemara says, Kofalah HaKadosh Baruch Schora Ba'olam Hazeh. So what did God do? God doubled his reward in this world. In order to exclude him from the world to come. And we know that's exactly what happened to Eov. Eov was 70. By the time he got to the age of 70, he was extremely successful. He was this righteous man. He was a big Baal Chesed. He built a big Baal Tzedakah and everything else. And then God set the Satan on him. The Satan took everything away from him and killed his whole family and took all his money away from him, made him sick, brought a famine on his land, killed all his animals, made his animals aggressive. And subsequent to that, the end of the story is that he gave him back everything that he'd lost in kefil, in double. And Eov, who was 70 at the time that he was destroyed by the Sodom, lived another 140 years. And he had twice as many children. He had another wife, and everything he had before was doubled. So that's what the Gemara said, that he wasn't Jewish. And his whole focus in life was to do it as well as he could in the physical world, in the material world. So God brought upon him these Yisurin, these illnesses, and all the troubles that were brought upon him. Hischil Mechorev Umegadev, and this non-Jew Eov cursed God, blasphemed against God. So God doubled his reward, so that he'd have all his reward in this world, and he'd be excluded from the world to come. Now this doesn't sound like a person comparable, even if he existed. This doesn't sound like a person comparable to Noach or Daniel, who are completely different. Noach was a great tzaddik. Daniel was a great tzaddik. Furthermore, the Pasuk says, and the Gemara brings that the Pasuk says, the verse says in Eov, Kol ha'onon vayelach, ki yored she'ol lo yaleh, that Eov said, just as the cloud is consumed and vanishes away, so he who goes down to the grave shall come up no more. In other words, he didn't believe in Tchias HaMeisim either. He thought, you live and you die and there's nothing else. When you die, that's it. There's no, no God, no, nothing. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava. Rava says, Mikan Shekafa Eov b'Tchias HaMeisim. Not only did he curse God, not only was he not Jewish, not only was he obsessed with the material world, but he was kofar b'tchias ha'meisim. He didn't believe that God would bring people back to life. And so, again, looking at Eov as the way the Gemara describes him, this Eov certainly doesn't sound like someone in the league of Noach and Daniel. And the question remains a really big question: what's he doing in our story? As we'll see later when we look at the Abarbanel, maybe not today, but maybe next week. There's plenty of people in history of the Jewish world that saw the world bonui chorav ubonui, that as they started off life, wonderfully well, everything was going their way, and then they had everything snatched away from them, and then they were rehabilitated and got everything back. The greatest example would be Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was brought up in the house of Paro. Then he ended up, you know, everything was going for him, born with a silver spoon in his mouth, so to speak, or he grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. Best education, the best, you know, food. He lived in a palace. Then he killed someone and he had to go on the run. Everything was taken away from him. And then finally he was rehabilitated. God made him the leader of the Jewish people. So why don't you bring Moshe Rabbeinu as an example? Noach, Moshe, and Daniel. And as we're going to see later, there's plenty of examples. What about Naomi? Naomi, the mother-in-law of Ruth, she grew up in Beis Lechem. Her family were the leaders of the tribe of Yehuda, and they had everything going for them. They were bonui, they were built. Then Chorav, the famine came. They left. They went to live in Moab. Their children, the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, married non-Jewish women, and then they died, and she ended up with nothing. She ended up walking back to Beis Lechem, and then when she got back to Beis Lechem, she was rehabilitated, and her daughter-in-law converted, married Boaz, and they had a child who would eventually lead to David HaMelech. So there's plenty of examples in Jewish history without having to bring in a non-Jew who cursed God, and who no one really knows whether they ever existed or not. So this is a question that plagues this chapter, because as we're going to see, these three examples are brought over and over again for the four categories of suffering that are going to be felt by the Jews of Yerushalayim. And these are going to be examples of the three people that were also suffered these four categories of tragedy, well, at least three of them. Eov suffered all four, but the other two only suffered three. And they're used as examples. Why is Eov used as an example here? So the answer to this question is a deep Kabbalistic insight, which I'll pass on to you. And it's brought by the Ben Yehoyada in his commentary on the Gemara in Baba Basra, in other places as well, slightly differently. But I'm going to say it over to you. There's bits I'm going to miss out because he does mention that certain things shouldn't be said in public. But the majority of it we can discuss. So this is the Ben Yehoyada, and he's really quoting the Ari, on issues that we've discussed when in our discussion of the Derech Hashem. Those that study the Derech Hashem with me will recognize some of these issues. And this is, again, hold on to your hats here, because this is not straightforward. In the chat button, David Barrett, is the implication that Job represents any God-believing Jew person who will suffer many downs in life, and how with the firm belief that it will turn out well in the end? Well, it's not just him, not just Yoav, not just Job, not just Eov. You've got Daniel as well, and Noach as well, as we'll see. And when we have a little look at Noach as well, Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Was Noach Jewish? So this is a question, was Avram Jewish? Was Noach Jewish? Really, the essence of being a Jew started on Mount Sinai. I use the term Jewish loosely, really up to the time of Matan Torah, on the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. Everybody who lived were considered to be B'nai Noach. And certainly from the perspective of what we understand as being a Jew, Avram wasn't a Jew, Noach wasn't a Jew, but they were certainly had a connection to God, and they were fervent monotheists. In that respect, I suppose you could consider them to be similar to us in that respect, Jewish in not in name, but Jewish in outlook and temperament. So, and we call them the Avos, right? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are called Avos. But were they Jewish? Not in the traditional sense. No, they weren't Jewish in the traditional sense. Did they keep the whole Torah? There are Midrashim that said they did, but it's not possible to imagine or even believe that they kept the whole Torah. It's not possible to believe they put tefillin on every morning, or the laws of tefillin hadn't been given yet. It's not possible to believe that, they kept Seder night on 15th of Nisan, because the Jews hadn't even gone down to Egypt yet. Never mind left. So it's an interesting discussion whether they were Jewish or not, but certainly they were monotheists and they had a deep-seated connection to God. Anyway, back to the Ben Yoyada. And he says like this.
Sorry, wasn't Yoav the same? He
Sorry?
wasn't the Satan challenging him about his belief in God?
Absolutely. Yeah,
So
if
he,
he ex
so they're
if
all spiritually sort of in a similar place, no?
Well, no. Doniel's Jewish.
Right. But not
Doniel is.
Noah and not Yoav. Two out of three.
Two out of three. Yeah. Okay. But we count Noah as one of our ancestors, and we all come from Noah, so to speak, in that respect.
Well, Adam
Through.
Hattusha too, and he wasn't
Yeah.
Jewish, was he?
Okay. I agree with you. Technically, they weren't Jewish. Technically, they weren't Jewish, but we encapsulate them in our spiritual history as being
I
part
mean,
of the Jewish people.
just making a big deal that Yoav doesn't fit in here because he wasn't a Jew. Well,
No,
he was.
because
Yeah.
the point that we're making here is he wasn't Jewish. Even the majority opinion here is that even if he did exist, he probably existed after the time the Torah was given, and he still wasn't Jewish. Whereas Noach wasn't Jewish, because the only reason Noach wasn't considered to be Jewish because he was born before the Torah was given. Whereas Eov could have been born, at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he wasn't there on Mount Sinai. He didn't accept the Torah, even if he existed. So these are the things that the Ben Yoyada deals with, and he deals with them on the basis of things he's heard from the Ari. As I said, I'll pass on most of it to you. And this is how he starts. Hadova this whole issue here in Yechezkel is very difficult to understand. Eich yishvu divrei hamama hazeh. He says that these three things we know about Eov, namely that Eov might not have ever existed, that Eov was not Jewish, that Eov, when faced with his tests from the Satan, blasphemed and cursed God and denied the concept of the resurrection of the dead, as the Gemara in Baba Basra intimated. Unlike Noach, Noach didn't curse God. Noach didn't lose his faith in God because the flood was coming. Daniel didn't lose his faith in God. Daniel didn't curse God when he was dragged from his house and sent into exile in Babylonia. Says the Ben Yoyada, if all this is true, that Yoav might never existed, that Yoav was not Jewish, and that Yoav was blasphemed and cursed God when trouble came to his life and he started to suffer. If all this is true, he says, it makes you wonder how we can reconcile all that information with this verse, with the verse here in Yechezkel, which is our verse 14. There were these three men, if they lived in Yerushalayim, Noach, Daniel, Be'eov. Noach, Daniel, and Eov, Hema, through their own righteousness, Yinatzlu, they would have been able to save their lives, only themselves, because of their righteousness, says God. So the Ben Yoyada says like this: Mona hakosaves Eov im Noach v'Daniel. The very fact that the Tanakh and Yechezkel equates Eov with Noach and Daniel, Shoy Shadikin Gemurim. These two, at least we know, Noach and Daniel, were perfectly righteous, v'nochalei olam haba, and were people who certainly were candidates, went to the world to come. V'gamzocha also echod p'tirosa, and also remembers Eov after his death. In other words, he's mentioned here in this pasuk, he's obviously dead already. So it appears that he did exist. From why is Yechezkel bringing someone that didn't exist? He's remembered after his death, so it seems he must have existed. He says, So how do we get around all these issues regarding Daniel, regarding Eov? So he said the starting point is this. You can't argue that Eov, that the Eov described here in the book of Yecheskel is a different Eov from the one who has got his own book at the end of the Tanakh, the book of Ksuvim. Eov there, Haniskap Ksuvim Koi, Ki Kivin de Nokit Lei, Bestam Ominastam, Nira de Al Eov Zekoi. Because after all, how many Eovs are mentioned in the Tanakh? You know, you can't say if his name was Jimmy Smith, so you could say, oh, well, this is a different Jimmy Smith from the one that's mentioned, you know, in 12 other books. But if you look at through the Tanakh, how many people called the Eov were there? And the answer is only one. So there can't be an argument here that this is a different Eov from the one in the book of Ksuvim, in the book of the writings. He says, therefore, Venira Libis Yatadishma, it appears to me, with the help of heaven, the Eov Afal Pishin is Galgal Boterach. Now, here he tells you something that you didn't know, that Eov did exist. And Eov, according to this, is these are the words of the Ari, that in his book of Gilgulim, Sefer Gilgulim, the book of I don't know how to translate the word Gilgulim, incarnated, reincarnated souls, that Eov, Afal Pishin is Galgal Bo Terach. Eov is the Gilgul, is the reincarnated soul of Terach. Terach was Avram's father, and he was a pagan and an idol worshipper, as is clear. It's clear from the Torah, but it's also clear from the book of Yoshua, where Yoshua informs us about Avram, Terach Avi Avram, that Terach was the father of Avram, but Avi Nachor, and the father of Nachor, Avram's brother, by Yavdu Elohim Acherim, and they were pagans. And he says, in kol zeh, muchrech dehoyu lo nefesh al atzmam uvad zu ha nefesh to terach hamisgal geles bo. With all this in mind, Eov must have had a unique soul of his own as well, together with the soul of Terach that was incarnated inside him. In other words, this Eov was a real human being. He was born, and he was born with two souls, or two soul strands, at least two soul strands. One that was unique to him, and one that was a returning soul, the returning soul of Terach, the father of Avram. Now, this follows the opinion, I just got to mention, this follows the opinion from the Gemara that Eov lived at the time of Avram and Yitzchak, and that he was a grandson. Eov was a grandson of Terach, or a great grandson of Terach, and he came into the world, and his soul was a combination. He had a unique soul of his own, a unique purpose of his own, but he also came back with the soul of his either his grandfather or his great grandfather, a pagan who was Terach, Avram's father. And he tells you, the Ben Yoyoda tells you, because there's a general rule about reincarnated souls. And again, this is something we've discussed. Those who learned Derech Hashem with me, this is something that the Ramchal talks about in great detail. Kizah HaKlal, this is a general rule. Klal Godol de Kail Rabbeinu Ha'ari, this is one of the great general principles that the Ari, the great Ari, writes. B'Shar HaGulgulim, in the Sefer Shar HaGulgulim, the gates of the reincarnated, She'ein Shum Nefesh Misgalgelis Levado, that a soul that has previously died, or a body that's previously died, and the soul's has been gone back to where it came from, never returns Levado, never returns alone. K'mo Shehole Ela Muchrech Shetovo Imo Nefesh Acheris Chadosha, it always comes, it must, and always comes back accompanied by another new, clean soul, She'ena Mugulgelis Mikvar, that has never been reincarnated before, creating a duality of souls in a reincarnated individual. So if you have an individual who's born, And generally speaking, we don't know how it works in the sense that we don't know who's who at the zoo. We don't know whose hot souls you're carrying, if you're carrying somebody else's soul with you. But if you are carrying a soul with you that has previously been here, I always think about, when you have that sense, you know, sometimes you have a sense of deja vu, right? So that, you know, I always think about reincarnated souls when you have that sense of deja vu. But when a human being is born with a reincarnated soul, so it's made up of an original soul, an original soul strand, possibly connected to a reincarnated soul strand. Maybe more than one, maybe two, maybe three, maybe five. But what he's saying here is Eov was born, and Eov was born with two separate soul strands, one of his own that has never been here, one combination of soul strands that had never been here, that was Eov, and also the returning soul strands of Terach, the father of Avram, who was a pagan, and Ulafizah. If anybody's got any questions, by the way, as I go through this, just put it in the chat and I'll answer them straight away, if I can. Ulafizah, and because of this, Masha Omer Tana Debraisa, can, Chosid Hoya Ba'akub. As a result of all this, the Gemara in Baba Basra describes Eov as a pious man from among the nations of the world. In other words, a pagan. Chosid Hoya Ba'akum, the Gemara says. Now, Akum is an acronym of Avodas Kochavim. So he said he was a Chosid Hoya. On one hand, he was a Chosid, but he was also Akum. He was also Avodas Kochavim. He was also a pagan. So he was pious from the perspective of his own soul. But he was a pagan from the perspective of the soul that was also inside him, which was the soul of Terach. And Zeal Nefesh Terach. The Akum aspect, the Avodas Kochavim, the pagan aspect of what was contained in his soul, came from Terach, the reincarnation of Terach, Abram's father. Shehoyet Chilos of Akum, that who was spent his life in his first incarnation as a pagan, an idol worshipper, but now when he's reincarnated into this physical body, which we call this person Eov, he behaved, the physical body accompanied by these two souls, behaved certainly to a certain extent like a chosid, like a pious man. And the reason is that the soul of Terach was returning was like a chesed to Avraham, that his father's soul should return to make a tikkun, to make a repair for his pagan activity in his first life, and that his soul should act like a chosid in a second, get given a second opportunity to act like a chosid. And that's why Eov is described in this Gemara, he says, as Chosid Hoya Ba'akum. On the one hand, he was an Akum, he was originally a pagan, but now he's given the opportunity to become a Chosid, to become, not Chosid, not a Lubavitcher, Chosid, a pious. Shehoya Oyvid Slomim B'choito Machiti. His whole life, Terach's whole life, original life, was plagued by being not only a sinner, but somebody who causes other people to sin. He worshipped idols. He was chote. He was a sinner. Umachti, and he caused other people to sin. Tried to make his son, his children, into pagans. Below bola olam hazeh shenis begulgul elikadei lekabel schora. So we have says the Ben Yishchai. We have the soul of Terach is now paired with Eov, this new soul who was originally an idol worshipper. And he returned to this world a second time as a Gilgal in order to receive his reward. Meaning, Ritzon Aloma she Yesukun Vyizka Ozla Kabola Schabim Komo Bismano Chuba Olamabo. Meaning that he was supposed to correct his behavior from his first time here, make a tikkun, a repair in his second incarnation while he was paired with Eov's soul, that he could then be rewarded when he died for a second time and receive appropriate reward in the next world. Says the Ben Ish Chai, and how did that work? How did he get on? How did it all work out for him? Behavior of Yisurin. So God brought that terrible suffering upon this individual. This individual, Eov, the physical being that contained these two souls. Behavior of Yisurin. God brought terrible despair, suffering, tragedy to him. Kedei the taknova ozikabel schorah ba'olam haba, to repair his previous misdeeds, and then he would receive appropriate reward in the next world. But, says the Ben Ish Chai, things didn't go to plan. As the Gemara says, v'hischil mechoref u'megadef, as a result of all the suffering he endured, the terach part of this joint soul began to blaspheme and curse God. There was no physical cursing and blaspheming of God, but there was part of this dual soul that cursed God. Mechoref u'megadef, lo ilo ha'yisurin shelo, sheyeh mekabel schorah ba'olam haba. So that the suffering that he was going through had no effect in making a tikkun, making a reparation for the sinful life that he had the first time around. Lochay, therefore, the Gemara says, kofal oschor of olam hazeh. Consequently, when God stopped the Satan from punishing him, God doubled his material reward in this world. Kedei l'torda mekabelas haschar b'olam hazeh, in order to exclude him permanently from the world to come. You only get a second go, it appears. So Eov, as I mentioned, Eov and Terach were seven to Eov, Terach, this joint individual, one physical being with two souls, was 70 years old when the Satan destroyed him. After the Satan finished with him and he recovered, he lived another 140 years. He had twice as many children, and he was twice as wealthy as he was before. Kedei l'torah de mekabela saschar b'olam haba, in order that he blew it. He was given a second chance as a chesed to Avraham, and he blew it. Yeah, his soul couldn't deal with the suffering, and he cursed God. So God says, right, whatever he's done that's of any benefit, he'll be rewarded for in this world. And when the physical Eo dies, that part of the soul that was originally Terach will not be admitted into Olam Haba. The whole divrei tana didon koi al nefesh Terach shemitzida osa Eo chira figidov. And so therefore he says, all the disparaging remarks made about Eo in the Gemara in Baba Basra, that Eov may not really have existed as a physical being, that Eov was a non-Jewish pagan, that Eov cursed God, that Eov denied God and denied the resurrection of the dead, all these arguments refer to that part of Eov that was represented by the reincarnated soul of Terach, who shared a physical body with Eov, but was in fact a returning soul that failed to make a tikkun. So that's a reparation to his soul that will allow him to enter the world to come. Avol kro di Yecheskel anovi. But the verse in Yecheskel, koi, avol kro di Yecheskel anovi olav shalom koi, al nefesh ha ikoris shel Eov. But the verse in Yecheskel is not talking about that side of Eov, that spiritual side of Eov, that part of Eov's soul. It's referring to the primary, new, original, clean soul in this physical body. That soul and the physical body it inhabited was the Eov himself. Eov himself was a great person. Ki guf zeh shel Eov hagam d'nisgag l'bav nefesh terach, hoyu ba'od nefesh chadosha acheres. Because as we said before, this body of Eov, in which the soul of Terach was born into, also contained a new soul, a brand new soul, a clean soul, a nefesh tohor, a neshama tohor, which was Eov's soul. The nefesh zu, and this new soul, this soul of Eov, this brand new soul, lo chachelet b'chol ha-mitzvah she'osa ba'olam hazeh, together with Eov's body, performed all the mitzvahs possible that it's possible to do in the physical world. That the soul, this new soul, was driving this physical body on to perform as many mitzvahs as they could whilst alive. Beguf zeh, in this physical reality, in this physical body. And he never, this soul, never cursed or blasphemed God with any part of his soul. He was ready to accept all the punishment that was being brought upon him. It was that part of the soul that belonged to Terach that was doing all the complaining. But Alei Ne'emah Bo, and that is why Yoav is described by God himself. God describes Yoav in the first chapter, chapter 1, verse 8, Ish tom v'yosha yirei Elohim b'sor me'rah, that Eov, the soul, the perfect soul of Eov, created a sincere, perfect, and upright man who was God-fearing and who shunned the evil. V'nefesh hu holcha l'gan Eden. And this soul, as opposed to Terach's soul, went directly to Gan Eden, just like the souls of Noach and Daniel. V'hi minochle olam haba. And he is one of the inheritors of the world to come. And as a result of that, and it's from this perspective that he is grouped by Yecheskel as being the equal of Noach and Daniel. So there you have as I said, I had to miss some stuff out because the Ben Ish Chai says not, some of the stuff's not to be mentioned in public. But there you have a esoteric explanation of how some people sometimes they're born, and this is something the Ramchal deals with in great detail in the second section of the Derech Hashem. The idea that every soul is unique in the sense that it's made up of different strands. Some strands are have been here before. Some strands have never been here before. There's groups of 10 strands. Each strand has 10 strands. Each strand has 10 strands. So that the soul itself is immortal and infinite. And it can be made up of, it can either be made up of just one unique combination of soul strands, or it can be a combination of soul strands that have never been here before in that combination, or soul strands that have been here in different combinations. And as a result of that, we have this idea of Gilgul and people coming back in order to do tikkun, but we don't have a soul coming back, which is, seems to be what the Ari is saying. You don't have a soul coming back independently. In other words, if someone dies as a Rasha, and the soul is not admitted into the next world, it doesn't come back independently. It's not given a second chance independently. It's given a second chance in collaboration, not collaboration, but in connected to a brand new soul that comes into this world. Now, there's a book, hold on just a second. There's a very interesting book that I read by a religious psychoanalyst. Just a second. Anybody who's interested in how the soul works, not from a maybe not from a religious Jewish perspective, but maybe from a perspective of a contemporary psychology and psychiatry, there's this book. If anybody can see it, everyone should read it if they're interested in this type of stuff. I'm holding the book up. It's called Many Lives, Many Masters. It's written by Dr. Brian Weiss, who's a Frum man, and he's a psychoanalyst, and he does regression therapy what does he do, Larry? They do that
he
thing.
He takes the people back to past lives. He wasn't originally Frum.
No, he wasn't.
Frum through his patient, actually, when he saw what was going on.
And yeah.
He came to Detroit once with the Rosh Kollel, and they put on a program. He's a fascinating person.
No, unbelievable. I met him. So I was very, after I read this book, I was blown away because I'd read a lot of the stuff that the RE had been writing about. And it's like, you know, he's observing it. He's observing it in real time, right? He's observing it through his patience. So again, many, many lives, many masters. So again, as Larry said, well worth reading, an incredible individual, and lots of questions here, obviously. Who's this now? Joan, do we know why Terach was taking the family to Eretz Canaan but stopped in Choran? That's not, we do, yes, but it's not, we can't go into that now. It's not really germane to our discussion for another time. Even though, this is David Barrett, even though Job blasphemed God because of the distress causing, there's no mention or sign that he reverted to being a pagan, as in the previous soul. He still remained righteous, yes, because he was the overriding soul within that physical body. Doesn't the dual soul in Job's being interfere with his free will? No, it creates a louder voice, so to speak, within the confines of his Yetzirah, certainly, but it doesn't interfere with the free will. People have got free will. So he was unable to accept those things as he ought to have accepted them life after death. God takes that into consideration. His free will might have been partially compromised, but not to the extent where he wasn't capable of making free will decisions. Certainly not, as we see. At the end of the book, I don't want to get involved in the book of Eob too heavily, because the book of Eob gets very complicated. Anyone that's learned it, certainly the intervening, the first 8 chapters are okay. The last 4 or 5 chapters are okay. It's the intervening 20 chapters that no one really understands. But at the end of the book, all the Job's comforters say to him, basically the same thing. If you're being punished, you must have sinned. And he said, no, I've not sinned. He demands, the 3 comforters come in to see him, and Elihu comes to see to him. Some people say that's Eliyahu Hanavi. And eventually, so he's not, he wants to speak to God. He wants to speak to God. So God comes to see him. At the end of the book, anyone that's read the book of Job, the book of Eov, God comes to him and God says to him, how can I help you? And he says, Tzadik Varalo, Rosh Avatovlo, how can it be that good men suffer and bad men prosper, evil men prosper? And God says to him, well, we really don't, you and me, we really don't have a point of reference. Because I'm an infinite creator and you're a mortal human being with very limited intellect. Come back to me when you've created a universe, and then we'll have what to discuss, and I'll be able to explain it to you then. Then we can speak as equals, and we'll, like, almost sarcastically. Then I'll be able to, we'll have a discussion about it, and you'll be able to understand it. And Eov said, okay then. And that's the end of the book. And what we garner from that is that Eov wasn't looking for answers. And this is really the point of the book of Job, really, ultimately, that we know we can't get the answers. What we want is to speak to God. We want to have a connection to God, even if God's not prepared to answer our questions. And just the mere fact that God came to speak to him was enough for Job. No, he was accepted. I won't understand it. I won't understand it. But at least I got a chance to connect to you. And that's what the book's about. The answer to Tzadik Varalo of the Rosh Avatovlo, why do good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people? So that's a question that God's not prepared to discuss with a human being. But Eov's quest to answer that question was not a quest for that question. The quest was to connect to God, which is the ultimate message of the book. Anyway, that is the opinion of the Ben Ish Chai here. Oh, gee whiz, is it 28 minutes past 6? Is that the actual time? Okay. I just want to, just a footnote before we move on, please God, to the next stage, which is punishment number 2. This section, 12 to 14, has dealt with the suffering caused by famine and we went off track a bit to discuss this idea of EO. But I just want to finish off with these two points, just a footnote. You can take the Ben Ishchai and listen over to what I've just told you again, trying to get maybe a deeper understanding, because there's a lot in there. I went through it quite quickly. It's a long piece by the Ben Ishchai, and you can look it up in the Gemara and Baba Basra on Daf Tes Vav on page 15, if you want to get an even deeper insight into how the soul works and how the soul strands work, how the different parts of the soul interact with each other, and why very often a human being is torn between two decisions and torn between two directions, three directions, four directions, because there's different parts of the soul, different parts of the soul that are equally righteous, but still pulling in different directions. They see different solutions to a particular problem. They can both be, both solutions can be considered to be correct or righteous or good or whatever, but you're having trouble reconciling all the thoughts that go through your mind. The thing about thoughts is that they suddenly appear, right? You can't help them appearing. That's one of the things that we haven't got to the bottom of yet. Scientists have not got to the bottom of how consciousness works and how thoughts suddenly appear in our minds. Should we do this? Should we do that? An idea, this, that, and the other. How does that work? So, again, if you want more detail, so go to the Gemara and Baba Basra on Daf Tes Vav, page 15, Daf Tes Zayin, page 16, and you'll see the long piece there by the Ben Ishchai. I've given you maybe 80% of it, but there's a little bit more there that you might be able to have a look at. But just before we finish this and move on to the next stage of the suffering, which will be wild animals, which not necessarily wild animals, it also includes natural disasters like violent weather, floods, earthquakes, volcano eruptions and tsunamis, etc. Just want to make one footnote point here. The order of these three mentioned here is not describing a historical timeline. It mentions them as Noah, Daniel and Io. They're written in that order, as a historical timeline, but rather the reason the list starts with Noah, then Daniel, and then Eov is for a different reason. And this is the Abarbanel. He points this out. Kine gilu chazal b'zeh ma shebiyarati shehem olam Noach kolam v'chliti be'olam. Noach is first because the effect of the disaster that he experienced affected the whole world. What happened to Noach, the world that he had, Bonui, Bechorav, Ubonui, a world that was built and affluent and was then completely destroyed and then rebuilt. So what he experienced was a disaster that affected the whole of humanity, the whole of the universe. Daniel, who medinoso biyichud, ba'olam yov beisam miyuchad min miyuchad. Daniel is mentioned second because the disasters that he experienced affected just his own country, Israel, when the Jews were exiled to Babylon. And he experienced the splendor of the first temple. He experienced, and that was the Bonui. He experienced the greatness of the first temple. Then he experienced the exile, the Chorav, the exile to Babylonia. And then he experienced the Bonui. His life was rebuilt and the Jews returned to the land of Israel. So that was an experience that wasn't experienced by the whole world. That was an experience that was experienced by a particular country. And finally, Eov is grouped here third because Eov, based on Meyuchad, Min Meyuchad. Eov, it's all about him. It's not about a country. It's not about the rest of the world. It's just about his life. Eov is mentioned third because of the disasters that he experienced affected just him and his immediate family and his own assets. So it's not a historical list here in terms of an historical timeline. Noach, Daniel, Eov. It could be that is the historical timeline. Unlikely, because all the opinions in the Gemara say Eov came well before Daniel. But it's for different reasons. Noach suffered, Noach's generation, or Noach experienced these four disasters that we're describing here, disasters that affected the whole planet. Daniel affected just his people, the people of Israel, the land of Israel, and Eov's distress, trauma, and tragedy affected only himself. So these are the three levels, right? These are the three levels that this is why these three are picked out, because they represent different types of destruction, distress, and suffering, suffering to the whole world, suffering to a particular nation, and suffering to a particular individual, which is an expression of God's hashkocha, that God has hashkocha over the whole of the universe. He has a more personal hashkocha over each nation, particularly the nation of Israel. And he also has a private hashkocha pratit, protis, a personal providence over each and every individual that is born, that is created. So that's where we're up to. We're up to verse 15, well, it's verses 15 and 16, which deals with Luchaya Roa Aviv Ba'oretz. If God would cause wild animals or natural disasters to occur in the land, what would happen? And then again, it brings you the example of these three guys, because Noach, Daniel, and Eov all suffered from either wild animals or from natural disasters during their lives, and they were saved. So that is all to come next week. Hope everyone enjoyed the shiur today. I know it's a little bit different, a little bit Kabbalistic. Good, there's no more questions in the box. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll move on, maybe even finish the chapter next week. There's a lot more to be said about these three individuals. I still want to answer the question why Moshe is not mentioned, why other individuals are not mentioned. We'll come back to that at the end of the story. But until then, I wish everybody a wonderful week. I'll see you again, please God, same time, same place, in health and happiness, next Monday. Kol Tov to everybody. Thanks for being present, and thanks for asking those interesting questions. And I'll see you all next week. Kol Tov to everybody.
Thanks, Kol Tov.
Thank you.